She's April.
And she's Molly.
And we are
the Book Besties.
No, really, I promise it'll be very sexy, Chess.
It will turn into an international incident.
Yep, that's on me.
So what is this big secret?
It's like this big. It's fine. Just get over it.
She does curse in the sex scenes in her head.
Enough about you. Let's talk about us.
With our special guest and returning friend, Emma Berry.
She's not just a returning friend. She's our friend and a returning special guest.
You guys know what I mean. She's a friend who's returning, who's an author and a special guest. She's all the things.
Emma Berry. Welcome back.
April, Molly, thank you so much for having me. I'm so excited to be here.
I've got your other book behind me. That we did in the fall, Bad Reputation, which is fantastic. I've reorganized my shelf and I have like special signed editions over here. So
mine's too far away, but mine, that's the current season behind me right there.
Yeah.
And then these are all pod, and then this row is all pod, and then those are my, that's my notebook graveyard for my retired projects.
It's important to have a place where you put them to rest. Do you have like a ceremony when you put them up there?
When they leave my, because I have a pocket over here. And the pocket over here is the ones I'm certain I'm coming back to. Eventually, I will come back to you. This is the ones I've given up hope on. It was really lovely to meet you. I will miss you. Goodbye, friend.
I feel like if I were a writer, which I'm not, I feel like if I were, I would not handwrite any of it. There'd be no way. Maybe like a sticky note so that I wouldn't forget something. But there, I wouldn't do it.
So I use a notebook for like my ideas, my thought processes, where I'm going, outline, characters, that kind of thing. Everything else is in here somewhere.
It's interesting because I went to school for journalism initially. And so I had to write things down. So you'd think I'd be like, that's what I do, but I don't.
What about you, Emma? Are you a notebook gal? Your tablet?
I mostly type on my computer. I do always carry a notebook with me just in case an idea strikes. But every once in a while, I will handwrite a scene, like maybe some dialogue. And I think that it is a different process when you're handwriting than when you're typing. And I think if I were really smart, like I would figure out which ones is like optimized and then write the scenes that are like better that way. And then the other ones kind of the other way. But I do handwrite some, but I would guess it's like 5% of a book.
Okay, that's not too bad. I mean, we're all different in the way we manage our writing, you know, maybe I'm chaos. So I'm going to need a couple different places for my thought process.
But see, that's why I feel like I couldn't do it, because if I had too many places for my thoughts, they would never end up in the one place.
But that's my whole life. My thoughts are everywhere. They're in your mind. They're in poor Emma's mind. They're in everybody's mind.
I do not unfortunately want to live in your mind.
And you agreed to give me a microphone and continue on sharing that with the world.
Yep, that's on me.
It is indeed on you. This is all your fault.
So we're here today with our friend Emma to talk about her newest book, which is not out yet, but we have arcs of it, and it is Bold Moves.
It's so exciting to see it out in the world, and it's like, that's a real book. You're holding it. It's a real book.
This isn't even your first real book.
I know, and it still never gets old, man.
Emma. I love this cover. The cover art is so beautiful. Like the colors, like that,
yes,
that right there. It's, I mean, beautiful. It's like it's you bold. Matched it, our logo. Like
it's bold.
I did. It is. Well, we went through many different color discussions, and like this was, we decided the boldest one. Here is my fun fact about the cover. The cover designer, whose name I'm blanking on, I'll think of in a second, Carolyn Teagle Johnson, is the same cover designer who did Daisy Jones and the Six.
Okay, Daisy Jones and the Six is so good though, but you have to read that one as an audiobook. That is like,
I've heard that the audio is amazing.
It is so good. So you even sent us this, like you made, or they were made,
I made the bookmarks, I will admit. Yeah, I saw that stamp on Etsy and I was like, it has to be mine. Oh no, yours ripped.
No, my cat saw a string
and pulled it out. Oh, kitty.
I don't know where it is. The kids will find it next week in the litter pan, I'm sure.
Probably. I can always mail you another bookmark if you want one.
No. Just the string, please. No. So I'm actually hosting this week. So how about an author's bio?
Okay. So my name is Emma.
I didn't give it. Oh, okay. Emma, tell them who the fuck you are. Do the work for us. How dare you?
I would be happy to. My main question was, should I do that in first or third?
Omniscient third, but make it unreliable.
Oh my gosh. We haven't even made it to the 10-minute mark and we're already just...
Okay. Emma so Berry special. Is a novelist, college lecturer, and former political staffer. Aren't you fancy?
She is quite fancy. This fancy.
Really?
She lives with her high school sweetheart and a that's a word I don't know.
Menagerie.
I'm sorry.
It's okay. I'm not even looking at it and I knew.
Menagerie of pets and children. You have a zoo is what you're saying.
We do actually have a zoo. That is completely accurate.
In Virginia, where she is occasionally finds time to read and write. You can visit her on her website, authoremmaberry.com. And Berry is with an A, not an E.
That is exactly right. Yeah.
Fruit. And she's local to me in the coastal Virginia area. Fact.
Mm-hmm. Yep. That kind of southeast corner of Virginia, almost in North Carolina.
Yep. Yep. We don't say where we live on this pod, just that I am in this side of Virginia.
Yes. And I am on the northern, I'm north of her. Mm-hmm. A wee bit.
4 hours. Not bad.
And some change.
Listen, when we lived in Houston, you could drive across Houston in 4 hours.
Yeah. Houston is 20 minutes from Houston.
It's quite miserable. I do not miss that traffic.
So, Emma, are you a native Virginian?
No. I grew up in Montana, actually, of all places. Not a lot of people there. No, that is
a lot less people in Virginia.
a lot less people. We've been on the East Coast since 2004 and in Virginia since 2008. So we've been here for a while, but not native.
Okay. You guys were just like, fuck being landlocked. I want to see some water.
Sort of. Like we moved to D.C. for me to work on Capitol Hill. So my husband and I graduated from college, got married, and moved to D.C. in the course of like a week, which was not recommended. That's not a thing to do. And we were there for a few years, and then I decided to go to grad school. So we were in Boston for a while, and then now we're in Virginia. So,
yeah. Look at you. All fancy and stuff.
This is a good place to be, Virginia. We like it here.
Yeah, no, we've been really happy.
I live in a much smaller town than you do here, but but I like this area. And most of the people from here, I feel like, are not actually from here. Like, there's a lot of transient. There are so many military bases here, and then the huge NASA facility and all that. Like, I feel like. Yes. Because of that.
I think it means people are like very welcoming because it's not all local. So there are a lot of new people.
We have the opposite problem here in my part of Maryland. So I live in like the DMV area of Maryland. And I'm in a county south of DC. And there's a lot of transports because PAX is here and Andrews and DC and all that. And the Marylanders are not happy when non-Marylanders try to claim they're Marylanders.
Y'all fucking live in Maryland. It's like this big. It's fine. Just get over it.
I don't have Old Bay in my bloodstream. So that obviously means I am not from Maryland. I know.
You're not a New Yorker, even though you're from New York.
Yep.
You're not a Marylander, even though you live in Maryland.
I lived in Texas for 12 years. I'm not allowed to call myself a Texan anymore.
No one who is not from Texas is allowed to call themselves a Texan. I was born in Texas, so I was allowed to say I was a Texan, even though I spent much more time in other states.
I birthed two children in Texas.
They're Texans. You're not.
Whatever. whatever. So, Emma, I would love for you to give a synopsis of Bold Moves, please, so that we can talk about this amazing book.
I would love to.
Shut up.
So the setup is that Jamie Croft is he writes TV shows and like directs them. He's a showrunner, and he had a show that was like an unexpected hit, which is like this docudrama about his father being arrested. His father was a doctor for selling prescription drugs, and he turned this into a drama kind of as a way, I think, to come to terms with it. It was like a big hit for my not Netflix. And so they told him, you can have as much money as you want to make whatever project you want next. And what he wants is to adapt the memoir written by his ex, who is like the bad girl grandmaster of the chess world. So the opening scene of the book is he shows up at her New York City apartment building to try and convince her to sell him the rights, and she turns him down. Eventually, she comes around, she gives him the rights, but on the condition that they write the show together. So the first part of the book is them writing the show together and then filming the show and promoting the show. And over the course of all of that, they're sort of coming to terms with whether or not they've grown up enough to sort of have a second chance, and whether or not all the secrets and lies that tore them apart the first time, whether they can kind of deal with those things now in the present.
Right. Oh, what a world, these two are.
Okay. Love it. And yeah, this lives in the same like verse as your Bad Reputation book that came out in October.
It does. And Funny Guy, the book before that. So like I've written this little trio of books that are all have this not Netflix, but I am done. I am done writing books about making TV, but I've done three of them in a row.
So Funny Guy is the one that I have not read yet. It's on my Kindle, but I haven't. But I did read Chick Magnet, which was like not in that verse. And it's so good. If you have not read Chick Magnet, get it. It's really, really good.
It's really good.
I loved it.
I mean,
I saw a meme the other day that was like dinosaurs turned into chicken, and then chicken turned into nuggets, and then nuggets turned into dinosaur nuggets. And I was like, do I send this to Emma? Is this something I text her, or are we not in that place?
People send me chicken memes all the time, and it's amazing. Somebody else sent me a reel, and it was like, tell me your boyfriend's a good boyfriend without telling me he's a good boyfriend. And it was a woman showing her boyfriend had put together a spreadsheet of all the different kinds of chicks she could buy at the feed store. And I was like, oh, yes, very good boyfriend. So, yeah.
I love it.
I really thought you were going in a different direction with that, because I just saw the guy that has the spreadsheet of all the food his girlfriend likes. So it's restaurant, her favorite meal, her backup meal.
Restaurant. That dude is going places.
Yeah.
And she like, better marry that man.
Yeah. Yes. Like she's like scrolling through it, and it's got like her shoe size, like what size dress she is. Like
Tom and I have been married for 15 years this year, and I promise you that if he went to a restaurant that we go to all the time, he still would not know what to order for me.
I'm 90% certain Matt could get about 75% of my order right, depending on where we go.
He also feels like I won't remember his order, and he always tells me he wants olives. And I'm like, I fucking know. Like, when I come in places, they're like, this sandwich needs extra olives, right? And I'm like, yeah, because I literally tell them, fill it with olives, just because you always think I don't know that you need olives. Marriage.
I know. Marriage. Not for everyone. Okay, so let's get the big question out of the way.
Okay.
Why chess? It's a good part of our storyline and the passion of our female lead, Scarlett. We'd love to hear about your research and if it helped improve your game.
So why chess? So the origin story on this book, I have to like back up a little ways, is that I have been trying to sell this book to my publisher for like three books now. And they kept saying no, because the original version of it was that he was a small town mayor and that she had left the small town. She was a travel writer in the original version and then comes back. And I thought they were going to buy that book right after Chick Magnet, actually. So that was the first time I gave them the proposal. And I was just convinced they were going to go for it. I gave them two proposals. And when they said funny guy, I was kind of like, what? It was like the like double take, like cartoon character meme. I actually kind of freaked out at my agent. And I was like, I don't think I can write that book. And she was like, you told them you could write that book. And I was like, I lied.
You have to write it now.
So I wrote Funny Guy.
I'm a big fat liar. Throw me in jail.
I was like, wait, that was just smoke. I thought they weren't going to say yes. And so I wrote Funny Guy. And then I gave them the proposal again. And then they were like, no, we don't want anything political. And I was like, oh, it won't be political. And they were like, we know, we don't care. And so they passed. And that's when I wrote Bad Reputation. But I really wanted to write a second chance romance. Like, I really mm-hmm. wanted that to be my next trope. So one of my kids started playing chess and joined the school chess team. And so I was like going to all of these chess tournaments and chaperoning chess events. And I just became really interested in the game. And then my kid and my husband were playing a lot, and my husband plays very well. I, at this point, could not play chess. Details. And then I rewrote the proposal. just a minor thing. So I rewrote the proposal around chess. And then there, she had left and become this big chess star. He had stayed in town, and he was initially going to be a high school teacher and like the coach of the chess team. And then she comes back in disgrace. And they were like, oh, we like that, but we wanted to be in the same world as Bad Reputation. And so I was like, oh, crap. So then I rewrote the proposal a third time, and then it had to have this TV angle. Mm-hmm. And so that was how it became that. So that was where it came from. But then I really liked, as I began to learn to play, because I did learn how to play chess to write the book, I love chess as a metaphor, the way that it's both Scarlett is very
stunning. Yes.
Yes. And like everything that she does, she's always like thinking several moves ahead, and everything is always mm-hmm. a gambit, and everything is calculated in some way. But also mm-hmm. that she's a very unpredictable player. Like that's kind of, and she's a very aggressive player. And that becomes kind of this metaphor for her. And that Jamie is kind of never learned to play chess. And that is also sort of a metaphor. And then like he eventually learns and that helps him understand her better. So anyway, it became, I thought, a very nice metaphor for her personality and the differences between them.
Yeah.
But it was initially me just trying to sell them this like freaking second chance romance that I really wanted to write, and just trying to figure out like the right thing that they were going to go for. But in that call, I was like, chess. And there was this pause, and I was like, no, really, I promise it'll be very sexy chess. And so that was actually the working title for a long time, was Sexy Chess. Like that's what the manuscript was called.
You know what though? I love, this is the true side of working in the traditional publishing world.
Yeah,
you're going to have to go back and forth. You're going to have to play tennis. You're going to have to do this volley. So, yeah, it seems like that's a lot of chess research. Like,
I like the idea of chess, and I like to think that I'm a good chess player because I won first place in a competition at summer camp. I read this book and went, I don't know what these chess things are. I had never even heard of a queen's kiss. And apparently that's a super famous move, which by the way is awesome named. And I was just like, I don't know chess. Also, my youngest son and my husband have been playing chess together. And here's how I feel about chess. First of all, in case you're wondering if you have to know how to play chess to read this book, you don't. You do not have to know about chess in order to read this book. It's not like super heavy in the things. And what Emma does, what you do is you explain the parts that are chess heavy. Here's what I have learned about how I feel about chess. I only want to play chess with people that are not smarter than me. That's it.
I'm not playing chess.
My husband is smarter than me, and both my sons are smarter than me, and I don't want to play chess with any of them because I don't think I'll win, and I like to win. And that's it. That's it.
Go ahead. Sorry, Emma.
Oh, it's okay. The best part about learning to play, and I will say to this day, I play very badly. I'm not a good player personally, but I learned to play just well enough that I could watch it and enjoy it. And so I can't play at that level, but I do enjoy watching really smart people play. So like as I was finishing up the edits, the candidates tournament was happening, the real one. Mm-hmm. And like at the most recent candidates, the number one player in the world, like completely came unglued. Like he played terribly. It was on the face you're making, Molly. It was down. Oh my God. It was like every day I would log on and be like, I hope he played well today. Cause like it was so distressing to watch this guy just like absolutely melt down. This is shit. Yes. But it was like such human drama. And like I can follow it just enough that I could watch his games and be like, oh crap, he blundered. Like I could see it, right? And so like that was what was good. Not that I play at that level, but being able to like appreciate people who do play at that level.
I mean, that's how I feel about the Olympics. I love watching the Olympics. I love like getting to see people at their peak. And I can't do any of that shit. There's just no fucking way.
I bet I could get in a bobsled. Put me in the like the little slicker and helmet.
That's
and
a terrible idea.
It's actually a luge. The single person luge. Just shove me in it. It's fine.
That's
I'll
a
go
terrible
fast.
Idea. That's a terrible
idea. I'm here for it because I can't play chess. And I'm not
the only thing that I could play in the Olympics. Well, I mean, I could probably do the break dancing as well as the Australian woman did, but softball and softball's coming back to the Olympics with the next Olympics, which makes me really happy. Anyway, that's not relevant, but I still love watching and playing softball. So
yeah,
I didn't really realize that chess was like this, the way that you have it in your book. And I guess I know that I'm deviating from the questions here, but is the chess divided by gender the way that it's described in your book?
Yes. So the division in chess is there is a women's division, which is cis women only. Trans women cannot play in that league. And then there is an open league. Only one woman has ever had success playing in the open league at the highest level. And that's Judith Polgár, who's a Hungarian chess player. And she's the only woman who has ever made candidates. And so in the book, Scarlett has made that tournament before and then plays in that tournament later in the book as well. And so like, I mean, I've basically written Scarlett to be like the best player ever, which is not, I mean, like that's kind of unrealistic, but yes, there is a division between gender in the chess world.
All I'm saying is if you put me in enough Lycra, I can go skiing down a hill. That's all I'm saying. I want a helmet in Lycra. It'll be fine.
No, no.
Why not?
That is a terrible idea.
We'll finally be able to.
Do you put, know like, that
logo
fun ways to die?
But everybody would die? Listen to Book Bessies. Finally,
that will be your dumb way to die.
But you know what? Look, get all the profits after I'm gone. Make sure my kids have college money.
Okay, I'll work on that.
Okay.
So Scarlett is like the best of the best.
Yeah,
and she's kind of a badass.
Yeah,
she is indeed, which was highly aspirational. Like, I feel like in real life, I am not that way at all. And I'm much more self-doubty. And so writing a character who is not only the best, but like is very confident that she's the best is not, it's very aspirational for me.
It's like Beyonce and Sasha Fierce. It's
yes.
Personality.
Yes, indeed.
Exactly.
So since although in this book, there are nods to Taylor.
There are many nods to Taylor.
Olivia Rodrigo.
There's also nods to Twilight in there. I'm assuming you did that for us and only us.
Yes, that's totally
it. That's how I'm keeping it in my mind, Emma. Any Twilight
nods
in your books are for us.
We asked her if vampires have sperm, and then she put Twilight in her book. I'm claiming that. I'm claiming it.
I think you should go with that.
Good. Any Twilight nods any author puts in from here on out is obviously for us and us only.
Of course it is.
Totally. Okay.
So since we're talking about Scarlett, I would love to move on to my next question, which is Scarlett is going home again and she is hesitant. This is a feeling I feel I personally relate to, but I'm certain others will too when they read this. Why this struggle? Why put her in this place?
Yeah, I mean, I think that sense of like going home, but that home is not easy is more dramatic than going home if home is beloved, right? Mm-hmm. And so, I think for me, it's just more interesting that way. And I think the genre convention is often like going home when you're missing home, going home when you're homesick, going home after failure, kind of. And I guess it was just going home after success. Where home isn't easy, where you didn't always feel welcome. I find that more interesting, I guess. So it just felt more dramatic.
Yeah. It felt realistic. Yeah. You know what I mean?
Yes. I also think it's interesting because I feel like when people do have these successes and they go home, it's like kind of diva-esque. But Starla mm-hmm. doesn't have that. She really feels like people – she really feels like people don't like her. Mm-hmm. And so why would they care right. about her success? And so, yeah, I mean, it's a different vibe. She – was kind of a loner in high school. I like that aspect that she had success despite a lot of shit that she went through, really.
Oh my god.
Yeah.
And I have to say, I am not usually a fan of second chance romance. I just kind of feel like leave it where it is. Like if it's over, it's over. Mm-hmm. But these two weren't finished. And I feel like you nailed it on this.
Yeah.
Like there are not often times that I'm like, okay, that worked. But like with second chance romance, just because that's how I am. Molly and I've talked about this before. I don't want to have any contact with any of my exes. You out. Mm-hmm. Like there's a reason why we're not together.
Yeah.
They had time to grow up. Like it's what, 18 years after school. Is that right?
Yeah. I mean, 17, I think at the start of the book and then 18 at the end. Cause the book has a really long timeline. Relative to most romances.
They're making a TV show. Yeah.
Yes. Yeah, and for me, I mean, I personally love a second chance, but I think it does need to be a long time in the breakup. Mm-hmm. So like – and I guess I do like second chance when it's kind of like second chance with a first love. I also then – if they were very young when they were together the first time, I'm often more forgiving of like why they broke up and more likely to believe that they really have changed now that they're adults. Yeah. And I think the key with second chance is why can they make it work now and they couldn't before? And so like, I'm glad that it worked because I really wanted to have a good answer as to why that was.
Right. Yeah. And I think you're right. Anytime it's a second chance romance and it hasn't been that long, I'm like, but these two, they have different lives. They have different careers. Mm-hmm. They had different struggles. Like Jamie went from like, the golden life, right? He lived a very charmed life to, oh, fuck, my dad is a criminal. Like, he's in prison. Like, that's a huge swing of things, right? Yeah. So, I do think it worked. I also think this is your sexiest book.
By far. There is a lot more sex in this book than there is in the previous three contemporaries that I've written. And I think there were reasons why I felt like this story needed more sex on the page than my previous ones did. And, you know, for me, it's always a question about like, what does the sex scene do? Like, what is it accomplishing? And I think without getting too much into it, I think the early sex scenes in the book are about their vulnerabilities and kind of like, are we in a different place? And then the later sex scenes in the book are about comfort and also showing us, I think, their growth. And so like, I felt like we need a scene from her POV early and we need a scene from his POV early. And then we need a scene from her POV late and a scene from his POV late. And so that just meant writing a lot more sex for sure.
Yeah. You do. I think it also helped like reveal that it wasn't one-sided because we kind of get this feeling like the beginning, like Jamie is still into her and he never really got over her, but we don't get those vibes from Scarlett until she's like, I'm going to play strip chess. And then I was like,
yes.
All right, let's go, girl.
And that was, sorry, go on, Molly.
No, it's just, you do this thing that other authors do. If a author is told to add more spice, they just shove it in there. And it was very warranted throughout this book and very necessary for these characters and how they process their emotions. The sex wasn't just about the physical for them. It was about how they were processing what was going on in their relationship.
Yes. And this is, I will say, like, for me, I usually write these books that are very, like, watercolory emotion-wise. And, like, I tend to write characters who are more in their heads and are not as emotional, maybe, like they're more kind of like head people than heart people. And these are characters both of them really, who are more heart people. I mean, they're both very smart, but they use their intelligence to like mask or control their emotions. They feel things real big. And so like the emotions in this book feel very big relative to a lot of the other things that I've written. And I think the amount of sex kind of reflected that. So I'm glad that it came through that it was about like what was at stake emotionally in those moments. Because that's what I was thinking about as I was writing them.
Right. Yeah. Yeah. Agreed.
So since we're still on Scarlett. Scarlett wasn't going to option her book till Jamie pretty much ambushes her in her lobby. Mm-hmm. Who do you really think wanted this more? Was it Jamie? Was it Scarlett? This is for April and I.
What?
Just keep going. Nope. Who wanted it more? Who was
I think he wants the book more. And then as soon as she sees him, she agrees to option it to him because she wants to see him. So I think that's what that moment is about. And I have to tell you that the second chapter of the book, which is the one where she like talks herself into selling it to him. The initial way I wrote that chapter was like she starts walking up the stairs and like just thinks. Like the whole chapter was in her head. There was no dialogue, whatever. And then she got to the top of the stairs and was like, okay, I'm going to sell it to him. And I finished writing it. And then I was like, Emma, you cannot write a chapter of like 12 pages of thinking. Like no one wants there. That.
Who has not been there and brain dumped whole chapter of an inner monologue and then sat back and like,
I mean, that's all of the Hunger Games.
So. right. But also.
Yes. But like, I was actually, there's a chapter in Portrait of a Lady by Henry James that's literally like character sits in chair and changes life over the course of 20 pages. And then I was like, Emma, you are not fucking Henry James. Like, you cannot do that. And so I can
pretend in my head. I can pretend in my head I'm like Henry.
It's like Portrait of a Lady, bold moves. They're the same thing.
Totally the same. I'm completely.
If you close your eyes.
Yes. So I had to change that one so that there was some talking and there was like some action and it wasn't just like Scarlett thinks for 12 pages.
Yeah.
Yeah.
I mean, I've been there though. Like, I don't trust any author who hasn't gone, oh shit, this is just all inner monologue. I should do more.
Yes. And I will say, I think there are readers who only want to read dialogue and action that's all they want in a book. I mean, I saw a post on like Reddit the other day on the romance subreddit where someone was like, I just skim all of the paragraphs that are just description or like thinking. And I was like, oh, I mean, there are certainly readers out there.
When you do that, friends.
Yeah. But again, and that's fine. It's fine to have that preference. It's just that like, that is certainly not the way that I write. So yeah.
I think Scarlett is I want to say isolated, but that's not really the right term. But she doesn't really have people, so I think her info dumping for 12 pages, like, that would have worked for her.
But
it probably didn't work for readers. I get it. But yeah, yes. she doesn't even really, I mean, realize that she has people, but she has people.
Right.
Yes.
I think the self-isolation goes with the chess. You know, like when you become a solo act, i.e. single tennis player, Olympian who's on a luge team, whatever. Mm-hmm. It is. I'm not letting this go now. I'm not. You can only rely on yourselves. And I feel like that's probably what happened. You know, she couldn't rely on her mom. She couldn't rely on boys just disappointed her. The men in her world just keep disappointing her. Like,
yeah. Mm-hmm. And that's where the chess thing comes in again. And that, like, you're sitting up there. It's you across from somebody else. And, like, it is one-on-one. And you don't even have coaches. Like, it's just you. And so that's where it comes from. Yeah. I mean, so she thinks of herself as being, like, this island of one at the beginning of the book. She's really not. But it's going to take her a while to realize that.
But that's a lot of like, internalized self-isolation that...
Yes, that's her womb, right?
I think it's also some childhood trauma, which
yes.
I won't go too much into because it does have some spoilers in it. But
again, Scarlett needs a therapist.
She does, actually.
You have a heavy conversation here. The fall of a small town and how drugs play a part in it.
Mm-hmm.
We see this with different drugs. In my home county in New York, it's meth and prescription drugs and whatnot.
Heroin in my town in Ohio.
while we're in a romance novel world, you built already, really, you're already staging. The truth is highlighted too. Not all is sunny in Musgrove. I want to talk about it, please.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. I mean, that is honest to my experience of growing up, you know, in North Central Montana, is that like small towns are not often idyllic. And I do understand that that's not the small town world that many readers want, that many readers want, you know, Stars Hollow. And like, I totally get that. And, you know, I enjoy reading the small town with three cupcake shops, sometimes two. But this is not that small town.
You're describing, everybody's got a town where I live right now.
I know, that's very true. Actually, that town is like that.
But April does live in Stars Hollow.
It is. It is true. But most small towns, I don't think that is honest to my experience of them, or many people's experience of them. And so I would say I love a romance that can give me the world that I experience with the warts and then still convince me about true love. Mm-hmm. Like, to me, that feels more magical when there is the drugs and the characters have student loans and they're kind of nervous about how they're going to pay their bills. And then also the radical sex and the true love. Like, whoa, that's magic. Yes. Versus like, if it is the town with the three cupcake shops, other than that town where you live, which is really like that. And then the true love comes in. It's just like, it just fits the fantasy of it all. I guess I like the realism and then the true love. To me, that's what I'm looking for most of the time. Again, sometimes I get the escapism, sometimes I get the fantasy. But I really wanted to write about the issues that I see in the world. And those are not always pretty. And then to give, you know, to have these characters who are growing and changing that way. I mean, to go to something we were talking about a second ago, why do they work now and they didn't before? I think some of it is what Jamie went through. And I think if his father had not gone to jail and if Jamie had not had to confront his privilege, I don't know that Jamie would have been a good partner for Scarlett, actually.
I agree.
I don't think Jamie would have succeeded. You know?
Yes, I think that is absolutely true. I think it would have been so easy to just sort of go and keep on being the golden boy and to not actually have gotten out of town and to have accomplished those things. I'm not saying like it's good for the family that it happened, but because it happened, they grew and changed. And I think part of how that happened, you know, leads him to be a good partner for her.
Yeah. So just to clarify, we really do have three cupcake shops in my small town. Two are across the street from each other. So there really are three here. But also to clarify, what I love about this book is the same thing that I loved about Bad Reputation. It's how smart you are with your writing. And this is why Molly and I wanted to have you back, because we felt this way about Bad Reputation.
Because you're ours. Damn it. You're ours. That's why you came back.
You belong to us now. But it's really, I like rom-coms. I do. I like the fluff on occasion. But I'll tell you what, some of my favorite romance novels are the ones that have darkness, because I find them to be so much more realistic. Like, I want the couple to have the witty banter and to have, you know, a happily ever after. But I don't think that always having just the surface where it's just sex and it's just, you know, all sunshine and rainbows, I don't find that to be realistic. And so books like this one and books like Love at First Spite by Olivia Dade and Archer's Voice by her name's escaping me right now.
I don't know.
Mia Sheridan. Those kind of books where there's a depth, where there's a darkness, but we still get a couple that makes sense. That to me is so much smarter than just the fluff. Yeah. You know? And that's what I liked about this. They needed to have this story.
I hope so. I mean, I also sometimes enjoy the fluff, but what I realized that I was looking for in romance was comfort, not escape. And to me, I think that's like a small distinction. And again, that's not what every reader wants, and that is fine. And I know that I'm not writing books that are for every reader, but I do like a book that is identifiably the world with all its mess and then can still offer that HEA that we want, or at least that I want. And so I guess that's definitely my goal as a writer. So I'm so glad it worked for you. But again, I know that it's not what every reader wants in romance, and that's totally cool.
Then they should go find something that is full of cupcakes.
But there are authors that do that, you know. I mean, right. I can't speak that I never read that because my shelves are full of romance books. So mm-hmm. I'm going to have both sides of the coin.
Yeah.
I actually, side note, my library that I work for, the Friends of the Library, is having a book sale, and our main library friend who does the book sale won't let me buy books from her. She just gives mm-hmm. them to me. And so I am now the proud owner of 12 Harlequin romance novels, and I've never read a Harlequin romance novel before. And I'm very excited. I'm very excited because that's basically what they are. There's a lot of sunshine and rainbows in them and a lot of, you know.
Sleeping anyway. In the barn.
I didn't get any of the ones that were taking place in a barn. All of the ones I took are military members, which Tom was like, what are you doing, April? And I was like, I know, right? It's like, I don't like men in the military, but I married one. So why would I want to read about it, right? But it's all that, or it's in a bookstore or a library, or one where it's MM, which I was surprised. I didn't think that Harlequin had any queer books. I didn't know books. That either. I thought they were all hetero, so I was really excited to find one that was MM.
Fancy. They've just started publishing MM and FF as well. So, like, I mean, that is a new thing for them, which is exciting. I used to love the Super Romance line, which I don't think they've published in, like, 10 years. But if you ever see any of those, especially the Sarah Mayberry super romances, mm-hmm. I loved that line. They're like longer and they're more set in the real world. And this is my thing. And they're really good. So those Sarah Mayberry super romances, totally worth seeking out.
And I think people don't realize that, like, Harlequin it's been around for a long time. This is what our mm-hmm. moms and our grandmas were
grandmothers,
reading. It's what
my grandmother.
That's what Rachel Green was wearing. That Joey is like, you got porn. That's what we are. That's what she was reading.
My yeah. grandma Arvina subscribed to the Avon once a month book club when they used to send those mm-hmm. in the mail mm-hmm.
with yep. the red covers.
The red
grandma,
covers.
My grandma okay. had those too.
I have one more question I want to do before we jump into the spoiler adjacent questions.
Yes, yeah. absolutely.
Because we kind of already talked about Jamie growing up, and we already talked about how Scarlett's relationship with her mom was weird, so I want to save our time and kind of move forward. Well, we're on the conversation structure. Yes, I want to talk about which we're going to have a conversation about structure in a little bit because it's a spoilery question, but I want to talk about how you choose to only highlight certain parts of the filming process and production process. Well, in your last book, Bad Reputations was set on a set, and you like that, set on a set. This kind of runs us through the whole gambit again of the process from creating a script to the premiere. Did you know this is how you wanted to structure the story, or did this happen organically over time as you were writing?
Yeah, it was much more the second one. Because I'd just written, so Funny Guy takes place backstage during this like SNL like show. And so it's like very much gets into like the nitty gritty of how they write and shoot SNL or not SNL. And then Bad Reputation is so much about the nitty gritty of like sex scenes, right? And like how they're choreographed and how they're rehearsed and how they're shot. And like all of that is very, very like micro. And I was not interested in getting into that part so much. So I wanted to take like a much more like macro view of it. And I was really interested in like kind of like soup to nuts. So like how do they go from writing it and then like shooting it and even promoting it? And it occurred to me like partway through drafting, and actually one of my friends said this to me, and then I was like, oh my gosh, you're right. That both Jamie and Scarlett have told memoirs in different ways, right? So like his first project is kind of a memoir-y project, and then she's written this memoir, and then like what they're working through together is like their shared history and like what really happened and like, why did that happen? And so since that was what was interesting to me and not the filming, it sort of let me take this like top level, like 10,000 foot view kind of. So like, I'm still interested in how stuff gets filmed. And so that's still there, but it wasn't as much the like nitty gritty. And a lot of the filming section is really about Scarlett's developing friendship with the actress who's going to play her, right? And the kind of relationship between them. And so, like, that was what a lot of those scenes focus on, because that's what I thought was, like, interesting.
Well, it's not really a primary part of your storyline. You don't need to move the story along. We don't need to sit on set and wait for somebody to show up with a horse. We don't have to wait for the sky to change light or whatever, right? Because it's not as important as who, or it's not important because it's not as primary as the, nope. Here it is. I lost my train of thought. Moving on.
Yeah, I liked that you focused more on the writing that they were doing in this one, because that made sense for these characters. Yeah. Like in Bad Reputation, yeah, it made sense that the focus was on the intimacy coordination, because yeah, that's what the character, one of the characters, right, was. For this one, it made sense that it was, the focus was on how the writing turned out. You got forced proximity in there. It's like, yeah, I don't know.
Yeah.
I don't know. I'm with this person. So, yeah.
So from here on out, guys, the questions we're going to be covering and talking about, mm-hmm, may have some spoilers in
them. We don't normally do that with authors, especially because Emma's book doesn't come out until April. April,
right,
22nd.
We're, yes, going to try to avoid them, but there are a few things we really think we should talk about in this book,
yeah,
that are really going to interest you guys when it comes to reading it.
Yeah. It's still worth it. Get the book.
Still worth it.
It's still worth it.
So I'm going to jump into April's question first. Or did you want to read it, April?
I don't have it pulled up, so go ahead.
Okay. So this is an April question. I can argue both sides of the coin, that Scarlett is right for what she did, and that she did, and that she did was kind of a villain. How do you want your audience to see her?
Yeah. So one thing, and I've gotten a lot of DMs from people who are reading the book who are like, so what is this big secret? What could she have done? Emma, tell me what she did. Is it this? Did she do this? And like, people are like very into guessing the secret.
Yeah.
And so one thing I'll say is that when I'm reading a book that has a big secret and like, it's kind of like teasing this big secret, sometimes you get the reveal and then it's like disappointing, right? And you're like, mm-hmm, that secret did not need like the big buildup, or that secret was not like worthy of the big buildup. And so, right, I, mm-hmm, kind of worried that I was writing a big secret book, and then if I waited until like the 80% mark to reveal the big secret, that, yeah, like maybe my secret would not be like big enough to justify that.
Yeah.
So I also thought that once the big secret got revealed, what Scarlett did before she left town the last time, that they needed time to work through that, because, yeah, it is a big thing. And so I thought that that really needed to come much earlier in the book. So, mm-hmm,
since
it's about a third in, right?
Yeah.
It's like maybe like just before halfway, I think.
Yeah.
And so, or roughly speaking, I guess, I'm not right sure
before,
page count.
Like right before the start of part the second. Two.
Of the second section.
Yes, yeah. Thank you.
And so anyhow, the way that I see that thing, so that's kind of the context. What I would say is that I personally understand why she did what she did. And I understand why she felt like that needed to be a solo decision. And I understand her concerns about if she had brought someone else into that decision-making process. I think she was worried Jamie wouldn't believe her. And I think she also, you know, she says to him, I thought that if I told you this, you would have to do something about it. And I didn't want you to have to do that. And I think she means that very sincerely.
Yeah.
And so did she make the right call? I think she made the best call that Scarlett, as an 18-year-old with, mm-hmm, who's basically raised herself, who doesn't feel like she has friends, who doesn't feel like she has an involved parent. I think she made the best call she could make in that moment. And I, at least, am very much on her side. But I am also incredibly sympathetic to Jamie getting, mm-hmm, that news and being like, I was in love with you. Like, I was very serious about you. You made this decision unilaterally. It is a decision, yeah, that primarily did not affect you, that primarily affected other people. And I'm really, right, pissed about that. Right. And so like, I'm, yeah, I am very sympathetic to his frustration and anger in the second part of the book, even, yeah, though I think she did make the right call. That said, I know people are going to struggle with her as a character. And I know that people are going to struggle with what she did.
But so, you want characters that are this complex.
Yeah, they need
3D. Don't want to read flat,
yeah,
single surface characters. I, mm-hmm, want somebody that's going to be this complex.
Yeah.
You know what I mean? And also, like, I can't believe she told him.
I think she had to tell him.
She had to tell him.
I'm dying with that secret.
Here's
a bad human. I am dying with that secret.
Here's the thing. I guessed that this was what she did, mostly because English teacher brain. And I kept thinking to myself, they've never said how he got caught. And I just kept thinking to myself, that would be something. But here's how I feel about Scarlett. I don't use this term lightly. I feel like she's a bit autistic coded. And I feel like that happens, that smart people are like, oh, well, they must be autistic, which is not everybody is autistic who's intelligent, but there's a line, because I have a son who's autistic, and I'm not speaking for all autistic people, I'm speaking for him. There's a line in which he doesn't understand that some things are okay to be secret. And so he recently came downstairs. We had virtual days during these snow days that we had that was fucking out of nowhere. What the fuck was up with the snow this winter?
Oh my gosh, it was wild.
It was weird.
And so he came downstairs and he's like, hey, I kind of cheated on my history assignment. And I was like, what do you mean? It was an open books test. How do you cheat on an open books test? He's like, well, I couldn't find the answer in my notes, so I Googled it. I was like, your teacher was well aware that you had access to the all internet. Like, he knew when he gave you this assignment that you could do that. But he felt like, that was something I shouldn't have done. I need to tell my parents.
Yeah.
And that to me was Scarlett. I understand that she didn't involve Jamie, and I totally get where he's coming from, that he's upset. But her mind was, this is not okay. People are getting hurt. Yeah. I don't want him to have to deal with this. I can deal with it. And so I can see both sides of her as a character trying to make that decision. And for me, that made her both deeply dislikable and deeply likable. She's like a Sheldon Cooper character, or no, better yet, Amy Farrah Fowler from Big Bang Theory. Amy does not have social skills. Like, they're bad. But she's so lovable. Like, she does things with heart. And that's how I felt like Scarlett was. And they needed to have a reason why she would just bounce.
I get her reasoning. I get her thought process. Having those big feelings at such a young age really alters our brain chemistry. And her choices, honestly, I don't know what I would have done in her shoes. I mean, I'll tell you what,
I'm a mandatory reporter as an educator. I am not a mandatory reporter as a public librarian. And that is a difficult situation to be in, because when I'm in the schools, I love these kids deeply and I feel like I need to protect them and I have to legally report these things. But it also means that things could go bad for them, right? In the public library, I see things that happen and I don't have to report it, but I also care about these people. It's a hard line to be on, you know?
Yeah. Scarlett is somewhat based on one of my grandfathers who he was orphaned when he was a kid and he grew up to be a lawyer and then a judge. And he might have been on the spectrum had he lived in a different period where that would have been diagnosable. But also, I think the result of losing his parents when he was really young, the combination of those two things, like, he was incredibly smart, just legitimately brilliant, but not sensitive to how social stuff works. And like in his family Christmas letter every year, he would reveal like intimate details of like family drama. And this Christmas letter went to like every federal judge on the East Coast. And he would like reveal that my uncle was having an affair. And like to him, this is just like a thing that happened in the family. And like he wouldn't think like that might be really like problematic. But he also was incredibly clear on like what is right and what is wrong. And like, and so I think her sense of like, this is wrong, it's hurting people. Other folks are maybe not going to see this because of the way that it's playing out, because there's this class kind of element to it as well. And so, I think she feels like something has to be done. And I think she legitimately does it because of that. But I think she also did it to spare Jamie. It just was not actually going to – there was nothing that could be done in that moment that was actually going to spare his feelings, you know?
And at some point they are going to have to reconcile that, or they're not going to be able to be together. And I think she really saw that although what she did hurt them ultimately, and I believe she gets this more from his sister than she does from Jamie, ultimately they were better because of it.
Yes, because the truth had to come out, and they would have been so unhappy and dysfunctional if it hadn't, right? Yeah. And so even though it did suck that it came out in many ways, like, it, you have to deal with it. You can't pretend it's not happening.
Right.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah. So I want to jump back to our formatting question real quick.
Yeah.
So we were talking about how it was broken into three sections.
Yes.
So can you please share with us how you decided to split the book up into three parts? Was this more to lean into the chess theme or more to help out with your timeline? Because I'm nosy as a writer.
Yeah. No, I'm super happy to answer that question. Once I decided that the truth had to come out, you know, roughly halfway through the book, there was that. So it was going to be like truth and reconciliation, right? That was going to be like the structure. Mm-hmm. And then I became really fascinated with the idea that in the early part of the book, as you were saying a second ago, April, this is, I think, totally right. Once they see each other again, he's like flabbergasted by seeing her. And he thought, I think, that he was over her. And it's like, oh crap, I was really, really, really not over her. And then he feels like an idiot because he thinks she's moved on and he very, very clearly hasn't. Then the relationship is progressing. He's thinking maybe she tells this truth, and then the middle section of the book really flips, where like he is livid at her, she is now the one who is wanting a relationship, and he is the one who has pulled back. And then there's kind of another thing that happens that sets up like the final point when they can actually deal with their feelings and be together. And so like once it was clear to me we were going to have one dynamic, then like the big reveal was going to flip things around. I then really liked the idea that we had to flip things around another time. And it was very, very late in the process that it occurred to me that when you read books about chess, they often will talk about like opening, middle game, and end game. And I was like, holy shit, like, what do you know? My structure is like perfect for a chess match. Yeah, but it was very, very, very late. And I remember, like, I emailed a friend and I was like, would it be cheesy if? And my friend was like, no, required. Not cheesy, required to, like, have it broken up like a chess match.
Yeah.
Absolutely. Now that you figured it out, you have to do it.
Yeah.
It would be a sin not to, right?
Yeah.
Something like that.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah. Here at Book Besties, we talk about dual narration constantly. Bold Moves is the second book you've brought to Book Besties, and you do it well, dual narration. I hope you know that. Please share with the baby authors and our readers how you do it so well. How do you get two voices so great?
Well, thank you. And what I'm glad that it comes across that way, because it's, I think, something that I really worry about in terms of just in terms of craft. So what the first choice I always make is who's going to be cursier. And I guess you could have write two very cursy characters.
If you had a question about this, actually.
Did you really?
Question about this? Oh, okay, my God.
This was going to be my question for you when we hung out.
Okay, awesome. Okay, so
we're going to ask it now.
Okay, yeah, what's your question, April? Okay, well, that's the first decision. It's like one of them is going to be cursy, one of them is not. Usually, then one of them will speak more formally. So like one of them will use more contractions and the other one will use fewer. I also tend to decide that one of them, and like in Funny Guy, I got really militant about this. Like Sam never, ever uses a semicolon at all in his chapters. Then eventually like an editor went in and added some semicolons. And I took some of them out, but I left some of them in. But like he's not a guy. He like didn't go to college. He wouldn't use a semicolon. Okay, that was wrong for him.
Why would I use a semicolon? That's for rich people.
Exactly. That is exactly what Sam would say.
And then, rich people punctuation. I ain't got some time for that.
Yes. And even sometimes if I'm deciding between two words, one of them will use words that are more so ridiculous. Greek and Latin?
No, it's not.
And then one of them will use words that are more Anglo-Saxon. And so, like, I make all of these, like, and they're just, like, the tiniest little decisions.
I love
but the ways, the ways you can force the voice apart, that's kind of part of how I do it. So, like, he is the cursy one in this book. She is not the cursy one in this mm-hmm. book. Mm-hmm. He's the semicolon one. She is not the semicolon one. He is more the Greek and Latin. I love the way the brain works. It's so dorky. I apologize for being this way.
No, I love this because I've never heard anybody figure out such a clever way to divide them right away. Like me, it's just two different people talking in my head, and you're like, no, they have their own files. They yes. go away. They go in their pockets, and like, you're just so precise. And I want to dig through your laptop now and be like, look at all your notes and stuff.
Okay, so
April and I made this whole conversation. This is so funny.
I texted Molly and I was like, I really want to ask her this, but I feel like.
Because we're talking about questions for today.
Yes. And I was like, I feel like this is not like necessarily a pod thing. Like it's lit brainy. And the conversations that you and I have had because we have become friends and not just in this place. I felt like I decoded this. So Molly was like, that's not a pod question. But here's the thing.
Okay.
Did you choose to make Scarlet the one that has the less cursing and the more formal vocabulary because she was raised to be in the quote unquote lower class and she's now yes. in competitive chess. And so she has to be
more
superior.
Yes, 100%. That was like that she grew up poor. That is somewhat embarrassing.
Right
yeah, no, and I am delighted that came across because I was like, I am making this choice that no one will ever care about with me. But I'm so glad that like someone cared about it. But yeah, like because she grew up that way, she doesn't want to like conform to people's expectations, and so that's exactly why she talks that way.
She's the bad girl of chess who does not say fuck. And I was like, if she's not cursing, but she's the bad girl of chess, there's a reason.
She does curse in the sex scenes in her head. And so like there are moments when she will curse.
I mean, who doesn't?
Right. but it's, and she does it occasionally to bait him. Like, and he will know, I think that, and I think she even thinks at one point, like, I'm using this crude word and he's going to get that I'm trying to piss him off. Like,
yeah.
And so she does it with him sometimes, but she doesn't do it with other people. Yeah.
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 Yeah. Yeah. It, to me, it's that, she has to put on airs. Mm-hmm. She has to.
Yes.
And yeah.
Yep.
I'm so proud of myself right now.
Yeah! I can't believe you rolled around to this. That's like a whole 360 for us is wild. Okay, I got three more questions for you.
Okay.
The last two are April questions. This is the third book I've read of yours, April.
Mm-hmm.
Yes.
I don't know how to say, I don't do an April voice. This is the third book I've read of yours.
Why do I sound like that?
Well, no, I'm just trying.
And then I go ahead and put my voice all the way up here to refute that that's not what I sound like. So, awesome. Awesome.
One last time, I'm going to try this question. This is the third book I've read by you, and Bold Moves appears to be your spiciest. How do you go about writing the spice scenes? Why add more of this in this book?
Yeah, I mean, I think they just needed it. Like it, because even at the points when they are emotionally very far apart, they are physically very on the same page. And so, like, I think, you know, the spice early in the book shows us that this is still a relationship that's like worth trying to save. And then later on, you know, after when he's really pissed at her, like, there's still just a chemistry there that's kind of undeniable. But then I think the later scenes are much more vulnerable, even though they desperately do not want to be emotionally vulnerable in those moments. And so I don't know, like, there's times when I'll write the sex very early in the book, and then if I'm struggling with like what the couple has in common or why they should be together, I'll go back and read those scenes, and I'm like, this is why. And I mean, I don't want to be like, sex is the reason they should be together, but I think the sex just was a way for me to access some like emotional truths about them. So this is a book where I wrote the sex very early, and even when I was like writing them fighting, because they do, they fight spectacularly in the book, I would go back to those scenes and be like, this is why they're together.
And second chance romance, like in general, you can't be fuck buddies with your ex. Like the sex might have been good. It might have been good, but the feelings were already there. there was already emotions. So they do break down the barrier. It does break down the barrier of them. But this one is your spiciest, and I was okay with it. I was like, hello.
Early in my career, I wrote some books that were spicier. My friend Genevieve Turner and I wrote the 60s series, and there's a book in that series called Earthbound, which is kind of like – it's like my Rocky Horror Picture Show book. Like it's the it's the book I hear from readers about the most, like by a substantial margin. It is – it's like my cult book. Like no one read it, but everyone who read it loved it, and everyone who read it, I swear to God, has sent me an email. Like all 500 of you. But like really, it's like very, very small.
We love you. All 500.
Oh my God. No, favorite people on earth. But that book has loads of sex. Like it's a secret affair book and there's lots and lots of sex. So I wrote some books early that had more. It's just – I felt like then I wrote some narratives that didn't need as much heat, but this was a narrative that needed it. So
This trope, this book is a second chance romance. What made you choose this trope?
I wanted to write a book that was really angsty. So I tend to go back and forth between books where like everybody's
happy
and like everybody is like just trying their best. And then, and like, look, I love that kind of book. So like Chick Magnet is that kind of book and Bad Reputation is that kind of book. Where like everyone's mature and like everyone makes good choices or like tries to and like the best that they can for the emotional place that they're at. But like fundamentally good people being good. And then I write a book like that. And then I'm like, I like mess too. And then I want like a book where everybody's kind of messy. And so this was like after Bad Reputation, which is a book that's very driven by external drama. There's not a lot of drama between the couple. Like the drama is very external. So this was my like, now I need to write a book where everybody's emotions are like at 11, you know? So that was this book.
Okay. You made some good choices. It's smart. I know I keep saying that. And I said this, Emma actually did an event at my library, which I was very thankful for. I said that during the event too, that your writing is smart. And I feel like people don't, when they think of romance, they're like, well, that's, I just want the sugar plums and rainbows. And I'm like, you don't understand. I'm telling you, she gives you that. And it's wrapped up in a bow that is just so
full of emotional complexity.
It's more than
conversations.
I say this all the time. I'm not going to say the author, but it's more than, oh, baby, they're so pretty. I don't want that. I don't want that. It exists. I mean, if you want that. That's not what I want.
Yeah.
You want your brain to work while your other brain is working.
I do have feelings that live in my vagina. We have talked about this before. My feelings live in my vagina. My heart lives in my vagina.
We appreciate the time you took with us today, Emma. Before you go, could you let our fans know and your fans know where you're going to be, what you're doing next, what we're promoting, what we're looking at? Tell them. Yeah.
So I'm kind of at like a scary spot right now, which is that after Bad Reputation, I have nothing else on the schedule, which feels very terrifying. But there's a lot of things in the – there's a lot of things – there's a lot of potential right now. So like there's a book that's maybe being shopped and then there's like proposals that exist and I'm going to start writing another book in the next week. And so there's a lot of things in the mix. Well, I mean it'll take me like – 6 months to write, but you know, starting a new thing. I'm ready for a new couple. So like it's kind of terrifying because after this, I don't know, but I'm really hopeful that there is good news coming soon. But I just can't say anything for sure.
Well, I highly recommend that you write a story about a librarian and a Coast Guardsman and how they have very different personalities and somehow they love each other. I just feel like it would make a good story. I just feel like it would.
I actually was going to be vaguer. I was going to say, hear me out. 90s, Leo, Romeo and Juliet, but mixed with Empire Records. So it's Romeo and Juliet at Empire Records and all that chaos.
But Romeo and Juliet is not a romance story. They both die.
That's what I'm saying, though. I want the drama.
She's 14. Of, like
No. I want the drama.
He was in love with someone else at the start of the book.
No. I want the drama of the 90s Romeo and Juliet. I don't actually want Romeo and Juliet. That story is terrible. Like,
I mean, it's a good story. I like it.
They're like 16-year-old. They're children. And they commit suicide. And over what? Mommy said no? No.
I mean, that does feel like things that teenagers do, though. They are very nasty. No.
That's a no. Empire Records X.
I do think that 90s romance is coming in a big way. Like Y2K
I
romance.
I really think it's coming.
I very much think that's going to be it. I will say, like, the thing that I think I may have news on soonest is a dark academic. So, like, that's like what
we'll
I'm
bother
hoping.
You, bother you later. We'll bother you later.
Yeah.
You have my interest.
Fingers crossed.
Continue on. So let's talk about what we have coming up.
Yeah,
enough
but
about
before
you.
We do that,
let's talk about us.
Before we do that, Emma, thank you so much for coming back on.
Yeah, seriously.
Honestly, you are welcome anytime. We love you.
Hell, you can come read with us if you want.
Yeah, if you want to pick a book by somebody else and read and discuss it, we do that with Francesca Zappia.
Take the pressure off you and bitch about somebody else's work for a little bit.
I would love to. And thank you for having me. And I'm so sorry my internet was being a jerk, but I'm glad that our venue changed, fixed our problem.
It's fine. It's all good.
I'm not worried about it.
All right, so this is our last episode for March. So here's what we have coming up in April. I've got the schedule pulled up because I don't have physical copies of all the books. But the first book that we are covering in April is this book, Shark Heart.
Oh my God, this book is so good.
When Molly told me that she gave this book 5 stars, I was like, yeah, I'm going to read it just to spite her because there's no way. But it's fucking amazing. So we're going
to
read
Shark Heart. It when we cover it because it is just...
It's really good. The second
I
book
no
for
words.
I know. The second book for the month is The Ministry of Time, which Molly put this on, but I wanted to read it. So I'm very excited that we're doing this one. And then I don't have the other one. So put it right here, Tom. We're going to read The Wedding People, which it's just been everywhere for a year. That book has been out and it's been everywhere. I can't even get a copy at the library. So I had to break my book buying ban to buy it because otherwise I can't fucking read it. Then we're going to do The God of the Woods, which again, another book that's been everywhere. Very, very popular. And we're going to wrap out the month of April with this book, A Wizard's Guide to Defensive Baking. And we're actually going to have my husband back on. He's going to host that episode. He wanted us to cover it. And we're like, well, we'll do it, but you have to come on.
I thought Tom and I should be alone on. Have a solo episode where he
I mean if you yelling, want to I don't really want to read that book anyway, so that's fine with me.
I just have a feeling without you there to babysit it may
you two cannot function incident. Without me present, like you need me.
It will turn into an international incident.
Yes, that is accurate. That's accurate.
I love your husband, but we need a babysitter.
You do. You and Katie did fine without me when I wasn't on a couple episodes last season
different.
But you can't be with Tom.
I love you, Thomas, but that is different. Different.
So that's what we've got coming up. And just a reminder, we do have a Patreon now, and the subscriptions start at $3 a month. And you don't
your book besties.
You don't have to get all the bells and whistles. Just $3 a month would help us be able to travel because we are going to be doing something really big this summer, which we will announce soon, but we are waiting for what we're officially doing. We're officially doing the thing, but we're waiting for the thing to tell us we're doing the thing. Right. We know we're doing the thing. We're just waiting for the specifics.
And we've confirmed with the thing that we're doing the thing, and they want us to come to the thing, and we're coming to the thing.
I think we're overthinking this.
But it's fine. Things are happening.
Things are happening. So we're trying to pay for the travel, and we're trying to pay, you know, our bills. So not like our house payment, just our pod bills. So if you go
nice.
On and support us for $3 a month, that would be great. There are other bells and whistles that you can, you know, do as well. And we have some more guests coming up this season I'm very excited about. We have four more authors that we're having this season, which is incredible. Like, this is a packed season. Awesome. And Emma, you're wonderful, and I love you, and I love that we've become friends, and I'm going
to
replace you as Olivia's best friend. I'm excited.
Good luck.
Also, speaking of, you know what I realized with this book, and we didn't talk about this, but Scarlett is a curvy girl.
She is a curvy girl. Yes.
She got a little thickness to her.
She's a bombshell for sure.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. Love that for her. Love it.
I do.
That's all I got, Molly. Molly, you got anything else?
No, we'll see you guys next time.
Yep. Bye.
Bye. Bye.
Thank you for joining us on Book Besties with special guest author Emma Berry. Don't forget to like and subscribe. The views discussed here are those of April and Molly and not those of anyone else. Today's book was Bold Moves by Emma Berry. Your book besties are Molly Biggs and April Watkins. Editing by Thomas Watkins and music is Sleep Sweetly by Brigida. Don't forget to follow the Book Besties on Facebook, Instagram, TikTok, and YouTube. If you'd like to contact the Book Besties, please email us at bookbestiespod@gmail.com or visit our website, bookbestiespodcast.com. Till next time, besties, get lost in your favorite book.